This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
We thank you for joining us on a hot and steamy Tuesday in the tri-state area. It is August 11, 2020. Michael K. with Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg. We're all separated, but we're together for the next 4 hours. The other 20, that is certainly your responsibility. The news just came over, so we will start with this. And it's pretty significant news. The Big Ten has decided to postpone their football season. But they haven't canceled it. I guess they're kicking the can down the road to see if there's any advancement in the way this country is dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. So they're going to hope to play a spring football season. I would think that the great players in the Big Ten would probably just not play because, you know, they'll be going to workouts for NFL teams. Things are going to crash up against each other. Why get hurt that close to the draft? So I'm not sure how many of the great players in the Big Ten will actually play in the spring. But I don't think it matters because in college football, you essentially, it's like college basketball. You're rooting for the helmet and basketball, the uniform. You're rooting for the coach who's the highest paid, really the only paid big time person on the team, and you could change the bodies inside the uniforms. It's still college football. You're rooting for your school. You could still make bets on the game. So I think they're just done. I think they're kicking the can down the road and hoping that things change in this country. And boy, you have to pray and hope that that's the case, that by spring things change. But I think it's the prudent move for the Big Ten.
Yeah.
There are a lot of players that want to play, but I think it comes down to this, guys. I really do. They're afraid of a lawsuit. And unless the players sign away any kind of liability for them, they're not going to put players on the field. And maybe these players, most of them would be fine. The vast majority would be fine. But some might develop myocarditis. And all of a sudden, any possible NFL career is put on hold, if not over. And I think that's what they've been told by all of their doctors. There's a chance that you can get myocarditis and get really sick, and then we're going to get sued. And I think that's what they're afraid of.
Yeah, and I think the NFL should do the same thing, quite frankly. I mean, just wait this thing out and just hope things get a little better. I mean, things have gotten better over the last 5 months. So you think about maybe if you delay things another 2-3 months, that things will be even better and safer. I'm not sure it'll ever be risk-free. Nothing's ever risk-free, but to try to reduce the risks as much as possible would be a prudent thing to do. Now, what I would wonder, Michael, if this ends up being a decision that all conferences make, doesn't Trevor Lawrence have to play in the spring? I mean, he just made a big stink in a statement on how he has to play. It's the safest place for his players to be. And then if they move it to the spring, he's out because he doesn't want to hurt himself before the draft?
What was that, Pete?
Well, he's out because it doesn't benefit him anymore? I mean, I hear what Don's saying. Like, if you have to play, then don't you want to play in the spring too?
Yeah, but he's saying the players that are speaking out and the coaches that are speaking out, they're kind of like tilting this their way by saying this is the safest thing if we do play. So if you're going through what's supposed to be a tough time with this virus in the winter and you're not playing in the fall and the winter, then they could say, well, you know what, we got through this anyway, and now it's time for us to, you know, make some money. So I personally think that any big time player that plays spring college football is out of their mind. I mean, let's just connect it to what Marcus Stroman did. Why? Why would you do it? If you're that close to a payday, why would you play? Doesn't make sense.
I think you said it best, Michael. No matter how big the player, it's probably not going to affect the passion for that fan base because they root for the colors or they went to that school. So it probably doesn't affect anything. So I think the fan base might be a little disappointed they lost their starting quarterback. But when you've got a roster of 75 guys, some of these big-time schools, Michael, their backup quarterback's better than the majority of the quarterbacks in the country. So I don't think the fans would necessarily mind. I was just saying that Trevor Lawrence made such a big stink about how important it is for him to play. And then if they move it ahead a couple of months, then all of a sudden it's not important anymore. So it's really more about him than it is about, like, his teammates and players. Because the vast majority of players, Michael, don't get drafted in the first round. Right? They don't get drafted at all. And some of them that do have a chance of playing in the NFL desperately need that playing time to get something on tape to prove that they can at least sign with a team as a free agent. So those are the guys I feel bad for.
Our good buddy Bob Wischusen, who covers a lot of college football for ESPN, it's almost like we're on the same wavelength. He said, if Big Ten or any Power Five plays in the spring, the idea that fans won't care because the stars will skip for the draft. You've never been to any big-time college town. No player is bigger than the uniform they wear. If Michigan, Ohio State happens in spring with fans, 100,000 people will be there. And I agree. I truly believe that's the case. It's the only way to look at it.
They can flip it into being a cool, unique, amazing, different thing that's done once ever. You know, I think there's so much risk in trying to force it to happen in the fall, and it may end up failing and blowing up completely. Whereas, if you could just be patient and, you know, also, can I just throw this out there? Maybe encourage your fan bases that if you really care about a college football season, please wear a mask and social distance so we can be more likely to play. If you're willing to do that and delay the season, you're almost guaranteed to have it happen and complete once you get there. So to me, it's about risk versus reward. There's so much more risk with a fall season than there is with a spring season, and you could still make a ton of money in the spring.
Now, the Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren, here's his release. The mental and physical health and welfare of our student-athletes has been at the center of every decision we have made regarding the ability to proceed forward. As time progressed and after hours of discussion with our Big Ten Task Force for Emerging Infectious Diseases and the Big Ten Sports Medicine Committee, it became abundantly clear that there was too much uncertainty regarding potential medical risks to allow our student-athletes to compete this fall. We know how significant the student-athlete experience can be in shaping the future of the talented young men and women who compete in the Big Ten Conference. Although that knowledge made this a painstaking decision, it did not make it difficult. While I know our decision today will be disappointing in many ways for thousands of student-athletes and their families, I am heartened and inspired by their resilience, their insightful and discerning thoughts, and their participation through our conversations to this point. Everyone associated with the Big Ten Conference and its members' institutions is committed to getting everyone back to competition as soon as it is safe to do so. Now, let me throw this at you. I have a feeling that the big conferences, you know, the SEC, I believe that they're going to play. I think that where they are geographically and where those states geographically have landed in terms of the virus, I think that they will play. So does that mean that the Big Ten will allow any of its players that wants to play to transfer without skipping a year and play for an SEC team? Why wouldn't they, right?
Yeah, especially if that player, you know, isn't going to play for them in the spring. Because they, right? Because that would be the fear, is that they're not going to play anyway. I'm not
right.
Sure.
I think they'd have to,
now,
right?
Now, well, I don't know if they have to, but I think that would be the right thing to do, right?
Now, when I say have to, I mean that would be the right thing to do, but they don't always do right by the kids. I think the NCAA is a cesspool of filth.
They almost never do. Now, Finebaum, when he was on yesterday with Alan Hahn, suggested that teams that decide not to move to the spring are not postponed, that it would be a bad optic. And I wanted to bring this up yesterday. We didn't get a chance. We moved on. Do you think those conferences care about optic?
No.
They might be salivating at the chance of basically having the college football landscape to themselves.
And then they're not playing out of conference games anyway. They're just going to play within their conference.
So those other teams move to the spring. They're thinking, all right, we'll be able to play right there in September and October all by ourselves. And where does this leave college basketball? Because they usually start around November. So if you're moving football to the spring because you think it's safer, then I would think that there's going to be no college basketball either, right?
You would think so. You would think so. But, you know, football is going to start Labor Day weekend.
Right.
You know, college basketball will start sometime in November. Who knows what's going to happen sometime in November? I mean, the Russians today came out and said they have a vaccine.
Well, but obviously football makes more money than basketball.
Right.
But if that were the case, Michael, then wouldn't you just say we're just going to pause it for a while and see what happens over the next couple of months? They're moving it to the spring. So how could you like have college football waiting until the spring to play and then in October and November college basketball games going on?
I guess they'll go up against each other and they'll take their chances and they'll get their television money. This is all about money for anybody who doesn't think it's about money for baseball, hockey, basketball, football.
Of course.
It's all about money. If it wasn't about money, we'd put everything on pause.
And obviously, football is their main concern because that's what makes them the most money. I mean, obviously, the NCAA tournament makes a ton of money. I'm not sure how much money is made during the course of the season. When a lot of these buildings hold 10,000 people and the network television isn't nearly as big at that time. Because what happens, Michael, is that if they go up against each other, college basketball, where are they going to go? Because all these networks that have college football also have college basketball. So, like, what's CBS going to air? Are they going to air a college basketball game over a college football game? No. I mean, I don't know how they can coexist together from a television standpoint.
They'll figure it out. They will figure it out. And you know, our company is going to be hurt a lot. I mean, we make our living ESPN on college football. I mean, that's so much programming for ESPN. I'm sure that there's a lot of concerned people in Bristol right now. This is not really great. It's not great news.
Well, it could end up being really good news if some of the conferences play in the fall. And then you have, you know, highly rated college football games that are played in the spring.
If they play, yeah, I would agree. If you're just shape-shifting it to the spring, that's fine. But if these are completely banged, that's a big loss for our company.
And for Fox and a lot of these networks, Michael.
More so for us. I mean, we do so many college football games.
Absolutely. But think, Peter. Every network is involved in some way. ESPN, Fox, you know, our company with ESPN, you know, and also ABC, you know, CBS. I mean, every network airs college sports. College football's everywhere.
Well, it's brutal, and if it affects the tournament again next year, think about how brutal that is for CBS 2 years in a row.
Yeah, you're right. Let's take some phone calls. Obviously, we have a lot to talk about on the baseball side as well. We'll start off with Mike in Seabright. Mike.
Yeah, I guess from a point you guys are coming from, but I really think you guys are wrong on this. This isn't going anywhere. COVID's not going anywhere. So these guys are young, right? I'll just use, I'm a Clemson fan. They had 30 cases way back in late June, right? Since they've been testing every week, they haven't had a new case in over 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
If they're testing like this, and everyone in the ACC is testing like this, is it more safe for them to play football and stay on campus or cancel the season and go home? You're not getting tested, and then you're going home to mom or dad who are actually going to have health problems who this will attack.
Well, Mike, we didn't cancel the season. I mean, it's the doctors that are advising the Big Ten. Obviously, Eduardo Rodriguez is a healthy 27-year-old man with the Red Sox. He got COVID-19. He tried to work out, and he had myocarditis.
That's one example. And if he wasn't playing baseball, would he just not get it now? Is this just magical? Only attacks athletes when they're playing?
Well, they say that at least five athletes in the Big Ten have it also.
Oh, but would those guys not have it if they weren't practicing?
Well, I mean, but Mike, you make a good point. But here's the deal, Mike. If you get it once you go out into the world, that's on you. All right, if you're not protecting yourself, then that's on you. But if you get it playing football against another team because a guy snot bubbled in your face, then that's on the school, and the school's afraid of getting. But they're afraid of getting. They're afraid of getting sued, Mike.
But would they think that 18, 19-year-old kids are, once the season gets canceled, are just going to stay home, or are they going to be 18-year-old, 19-year-old kids?
But now, Mike, then that's on Michael. That's on them. Then that's on them. If they can't care for themselves and they can't take care of themselves, and they don't, if they want to go dive into the Lake of the Ozarks, that's on them and their family. But the school is responsible when they're playing for the school. How's that so hard to understand? If you think it's what, like Trevor Lawrence is going to say, it's more dangerous for us to be away from the team. Okay, then it's on you to take care of yourself. And if you want to go out and you want to have a good time and you want to be Mike Clevenger and Zach Plesac of the Indians, that's on you. That's not on the Indians. That's not on the schools. You can't protect everybody all the time. If people are left to their own devices and they still don't protect themselves, then bad on them.
If I get it because I decide to go someplace or a house party or go somewhere without a mask and I get it, you're right, that's on me. But if I get it playing college football for the university and I got it specifically because I was training with the team or playing against another team in a conference, well, then that's obviously on the university and they could be liable for it. That's the difference.
I don't see how people don't see it. They, even the players keep bringing that up. We're safer here. Well, that's because then you're a nudnik. Because if you are left to your own devices and you go out and you get infected, that's on you. That's not on Michigan. It's not on Michigan State. It's not on Ohio State. The presidents are deathly afraid of lawsuits. That's the only reason they're doing it. Let's go to Mike in the car. Mike. Oh, that was sad. Nobody likes to hear that. Let's go to John. He's in Great Neck. John, what's up?
Hey, guys. How you doing? I just wanted to come at this from a different perspective. I'm a former FCS player, and let's assume that everyone follows suit, right, and plays in the spring.
Right.
Now, if you start in late January, early February, I'm not talking about Ohio State and those. I mean just 130 FCS teams. You play, let's say, 8 games, no conference championships, no bowls. That means you'll have started in January or February, played 8 games. Mm-hmm. The 21 season starts on time. Even if you don't make a bowl game, you're playing a minimum of 12 games. So that means between February 1st and December 1st, you'll have played 20 Division I football games. Don't ever say player safety means a thing ever again if that happens. I don't want to hear them say that. Because forget about anything else. 20 games in 10 months is more than the NFL plays. That alone means that you don't care about player safety, and it's strictly about money. Because there is no more, oh, you know, we're trying to save the players from themselves. No, you're not. You're letting them play 20 games in that short amount of time. Bowl teams and all that, that's an extra game or two. And God forbid they play just 10 conference games mm-hmm. in the spring. You can get it up to 22, 23 games between February and mid-December.
Well, John, I mean, you played it. You know it. The players are cattle. In college sports, they're cattle. That's it. They have no union. They have no representation. I mean, the players now that say they want to play, that's the closest thing to unionizing that we've seen them do. But who's protecting them other than their parents? Their parents have to step in and go, you are not playing. You're not playing 20 games in a calendar year. You're not. It's up to the parents. Let's go to Danny in Long Island. Danny.
Hey, guys, a lot of those guys who played in the spring would be seniors that wouldn't be back in the fall, but it's a valid point, and that's a lot of football. You know, I'm not a big college football fan, but it's just sad because every time I hear somebody canceling, I just think of jobs, and you think of the jobs, and you know, that more jobs are getting canceled. I mean, if you cancel your football program and your volleyball program, are those coaches getting furloughed for a year? It's just more sadness that's going to spread across the country because I think the educational facilities were basically exempt from these layoffs. 39 million people got laid off. And now if it continues now when this happens, I think you're just going to see more people laid off and more misery. I took a trip up to Hudson Valley, my wife. We did a little couple-day trip just to get away from the world, and tourist places are dead, and we went to a big bed and breakfast and a distillery. They're going out of business. It's just there's so much misery in the heartland that is out of our sight that it just makes me very sad. But the question is, as far as the liability, Mike, you nailed it, because my brother's a lawyer. These decisions are being made not this. But let me ask you a question, Mike.
Danny, we're cutting out. Sorry. I mean, it's not just in the heartland. I read a story today. Retail businesses are leaving Manhattan. It's not worth it, they said. It's everywhere. The economic devastation from COVID-19 is going to be felt for decades. It stinks. It's crippling our country. We haven't had the right approach to it. There are people that just dismiss it. And because of that, it continues to spread. Now look at New Zealand. They had zero cases. Zero. Yesterday, 4 people tested positive. They put the country on lockdown. That's their reaction. Our reaction is different. Whether you want to agree with it or not, that's our reaction. And that's why we're still in a situation where over 1,000 people a day are dying. Let's go to Joey in Yonkers. Joey.
Hey, how are you guys? I was wanted to touch on something that Don mentioned about the timeline, about the pause of, college essentially wastes the month in November. They don't really play many big games after Thanksgiving. And I was just wondering, what is the reasoning behind, I know you mentioned college basketball, what is the reasoning behind not, you know, holding off until, you know, October, November, and then using that month of December that these teams have a month off in between bowls usually. And on top of that, you kind of stay on schedule with the NFL, and there's not that that's, you know, the big thing here, but, you know, that's another thing. You start in the Big Ten schedule in April. The NFL goes on, doesn't skip a beat. Your draft, your camp, you're running into camps, and I just wanted to know you guys' perspective on that. That's all.
Joey, I think what it comes down to is this. It doesn't seem like anybody has a real good grip on this virus, but everything that we've heard is it gets worse as the weather gets colder. So if you're going to start playing in December, wouldn't that be in the hot spot, no pun intended, of when the weather is coldest? And maybe it would spread more. But, you know, they also said, again, it's hard to know what to believe. They also said that the summer months, it would go away. And then there would be a revival in the fall. It didn't go away in the summer. It got worse.
So, again, I'm no doctor, Michael, but then that mean that there won't be a spike since it never really went away in the first place?
Yeah, it's hard to spike from something that didn't go down.
You know, so listen, we're all kind of grasping at straws here. I wouldn't be surprised if moving it to the spring is also a decision about money, because they're looking at, you know, the networks might like to get those games in the spring as opposed to just moving them up to November or December, where it interferes with like the Christmas holiday and all that. Maybe they're looking at that. It's just moving it to September is actually a way that they can make back a lot of their money, because, right, that's during sweeps and ratings are usually, that's a great time, and you won't necessarily be competing against the NBA, because the NBA might not start, will be early in their season rather than playing in their postseason. So I'm wondering if they're making the decision to move to the spring because it'll be more lucrative than delaying it a couple of months.
I'm sure that they spoke with their television partners, Don. That's a good point. When's the best time for you if we play? And again, they're just kicking the can down the road. We have no idea if they're playing in the spring. None. Because if the virus is still raging, let's hope it's not, then they're not playing in the spring either. But the thing that's going to make college, the thing that's going to make college football look really awful and anger the fans of college teams that postpone or completely cancel, if the NFL plays without a care in the world, they'll go, well, the NFL play. Well, those are professionals.
Yeah,
totally different.
That have a union, and their players have agents. I mean, they can be advised better. They can opt out without it being the financial burden that it would be for college players that would opt out and maybe lose a chance to get drafted. It's apples and oranges, really. And the NFL could march through, Michael, and it'd be an absolute disaster, but they still finished it.
Right.
I mean, what would you describe baseball right now? I mean, baseball is moving forward, but can you honestly say it's worked?
Other than two teams, yeah, it has worked.
Right, but ask those other teams where the Cardinals haven't played since, what, July 29th?
Right, but that's on them because they did things that were wrong.
I don't know. I understand that, but it still puts baseball in a tough spot because of the fact that they're going to have so many mismatches of teams that have played five games as opposed to teams that tonight are going to play their 20th game.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Yeah.
Catch the show on demand whenever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
This is from Pro Football Talk after the two conferences have already postponed their football season. Pro Football Talk said, if liability concerns are driving decisions to postpone college football to the spring, this raises the stakes for schools that try to play in the fall. Hovering over any lawsuit would be the fact that major conferences decided it would be reasonably prudent to wait. So that plays against them possibly playing, but we will see. We have the Mets against the Nationals tonight. And that was a real butt-kicking last night from the Nationals. I don't know if Steven Matz was tipping his pitches, but the way the Met rotation has broken down with Syndergaard injured and Stroman opting out and Waka now injured, it almost seems, Don, correct me if I'm wrong, but Steven Matz is your titular number two starter, and if he's going to pitch the way he's pitching now, they're in a lot of trouble because that's not the way a number two starter should pitch, and it's been a couple of games now for him.
Well, it's not the way a number four or five starter would pitch either, Michael. I mean, that's an issue. Now, I'll defend Matz, or I have defended Matz. You can't be something you're not, and I'm not sure he'll ever be good enough to be a number two starter on a contending team. But to give your team no chance against the Nationals team, Michael, that was 4-7 going in, so they were definitely struggling. And to just get blitzkrieg the way you did so early in that game, giving yourselves no hope at all.
The Nationals,
and now you got Porcello's coming up. go ahead, Peter. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Don. The Nationals are coming off of just getting worked by the Orioles over the weekend. And that's what you think you're getting as a Mets fan. And then all of a sudden, they look like the Yankees yesterday.
Now you're going to ask Porcello to beat Scherzer for the second time in 2 weeks. So odds are that's probably not going to happen. Now you're really falling out of this. Now they're in it still. But, Michael, we had a conversation before the show started. The general concern seems to be that Brody, to try to save his job and to impress the new ownership, or just to appease the Wilpons, who still technically own the team, of making a run, is going to make some sort of damaging to the future trade to try to make something happen this year. Now, I know they're the 8th seed, and I know they could still find a way to get in this thing. But, Michael, you need more than one pitcher. I mean, what pitcher's available now that is going to make you go, okay, now they're ready? Now they're equipped to make a run. What pitcher?
Well, I mean, we don't know at this point because there's right. 16 of the 30 teams are going to make it, so over 50% of the teams. But there are going to be teams, though, Don, that want to dump payroll. And I got to tell you, if I were a Met fan right now, I would shudder at the thought of an unleashed Brody Van Wagenen with nobody to stop him, because the Wilpons probably want to go out with a run as well, where, you know, it's like if you sell a house and, you know, you just mess up the basement before you leave because everything's been paid for. It frightens me because this guy has proven, other than the J.D. Davis Day trade, he has no idea what he's doing when it comes to trades. He has completely ravaged this farm system. Are you going to trade away a Dominic Smith for a pitcher to try to make the playoffs and win that first best of three round? I don't know. And you would think that the Wilpons would be responsible enough to say, pump the brakes and let's just try to go in the way we are. But I think, you know, what do they care? Are they going to sell the team too? It's just an awful situation. Mike Vaccaro, I thought, it put it beautifully. You would think that somebody who's a baseball lifer would show the responsibility not to destroy a farm system in order to make that run. But Brody's not a baseball lifer. Brody gave up a great career as an agent to do this. He obviously wants to impress his new bosses. He's not going to impress his new bosses by A, not making the playoffs, or B, getting knocked out in the best of three. I think there's a real legitimate chance that this guy will make a really risky deal.
Well, think about what you just said there, though. This is a guy that gave up a really great career to become a general manager. All right, now he wants to impress the Wilpons or whatever. He tried to make a run. If he makes another deal that just ruins the Mets for the future and doesn't get this team in the playoffs, how's he ever going to find another job? He'd have to go back to being an agent with his tail between his legs.
He's going to have to go back to being an agent. He's not getting another job as a GM. There's no way. He knows that this is it. That's why he can make a deal now and think it's a great deal, but he doesn't know what a great deal is. Look at the deal that he made in Seattle.
I think we could bail the Mets out here. Just the future of the Mets is, I just don't know if that deal's out there. Because you look at the last place teams in every division. I wouldn't say Washington's out of it. Pittsburgh's dead. All right, I don't know what's up with St. Louis. Would St. Louis dump people just because they might not play enough games? I don't know. But if you go by winning percentage, they're still very much alive. Is there a Pirate pitcher that could be available? I mean, San Francisco and Arizona, they're tied for last. Giants don't. I watch the Giants every day. They don't have any starting pitching. Nobody wants Samardzija. He's a free agent at the end of the year, and he's just not very good. Is Arizona going to dump Madison Bumgarner?
No, because
they're only four and a half out of first place. Does Boston have any starting pitching? They're in last place.
Yeah, they've got some, but it's nothing great. But
no, it's nothing
but
great.
They
Kansas
might look
City.
At Brody. Oh, here's a mark. Let's get him.
I'm just saying, Michael, is that first of all, you need more than one pitcher, all right? Because what you're in essence is doing is trying to replace Syndergaard. But even if you say, all right, we knew we didn't have Syndergaard, you're trying to replace Stroman. All right? And then you might be able to find a pitcher that matches Marcus Stroman. All right, that solves the problem of your number two starter. Who's your number three starter? All right? Matt's is a mess.
But you got to get
Locke
one before
hurt.
You can get two, Don. You got one. I mean, you got to get one before he could get two. Again, left to his own devices, it frightens me.
I know, but I and listen, you're right. I mean, he could be a mad scientist out there and just bring the whole thing down. I'm just saying is that he's still a baseball man. I mean, you're not going to make a deal that's going to bring anybody over here that is going to change what's happening. Because Matz is still a pitcher. Porcello's still a pitcher that's in the rotation. They're not all of a sudden going to get better. So what you're in essence doing is replacing Waka and Stroman. And who out there are you going to be trading away the farm that's going to guarantee you to be better than those two pitchers? When you consider there's only a handful of teams that are going to be sellers anyway. Especially now, I just mentioned all the last place teams. Boston's only four out. Kansas City's only four out. The Angels are six out. I mean, Washington's in last place, three out. So we're talking Pittsburgh.
Yeah, but some teams might make a because every team is going to lose money this year. And even if you think you can make one of the 16 playoff spots, if you could get rid of a really highly paid pitcher and cut your payroll for next year, you could do it. And the Wilpons might take it on because they're not going to pay for it once they sell the team.
Then I guess that the answer to that would be Bumgarner, right? Arizona's in last place. Right.
I mean, how many pitchers are hurt, too?
Yeah.
The number's amazing.
56 pitchers are out, non-COVID-related, in Major League Baseball through 18 games. There were 21 last year.
And it's going to get worse.
That's almost three times.
It's going to get worse.
The amount. So everybody's going to be looking for pitchers, right? So that'll drive the price up. But, I mean, I would think Brody is going to look at it and say, to go out and get myself, a Jeff Samardzija as a rental, I can't imagine you're giving up Dominic Smith for that. If you are, then my God, then there's no credibility. You'll never get a job in the business again. And going back to being an agent, you'll be a laughingstock among the agents that you did such a horrible job not understanding and knowing talent. So hopefully he's got some credibility, Michael.
Now, the Yankees are playing the Braves tonight at Yankee Stadium, the beginning of a two-game set. And because, we're hooked in, we have the Yankee starting lineup brought to you by Nissan and Bigelow Tea. And strangely, Clint Frazier called up, but he's not in the lineup. DJ LeMahieu at second leads off, batting second. The right fielder, Aaron Judge. The center fielder is Aaron Hicks, hitting third. Cleaning up the first baseman, Luke Voit. Gleyber Torres at shortstop will bat fifth, batting sixth. The DH, Mike Ford. Gio Urshela at third base, bat seventh, batting eighth. The catcher, Gary Sanchez. And batting ninth and playing left field, it is Brett Gardner. That's today's Yankees starting lineup, brought to you by Nissan. Nissan's an easier choice than ever with their exciting and fuel-efficient lineup. Now, get great offers across their full line. Shop your local Nissan store and NissanUSA.com. And by Bigelow Tea. Bigelow Tea is a proud supporter of the Michael K. Show and the official hot tea of Joe Torre and the New York Yankees. Time now for the Yankees manager's report, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Paramus. Aaron Boone said moments ago, Clint Frazier is in our plans. He's going to be a big part of our plans, but not tonight. He didn't say that. I'm adding that. Let's listen to Aaron Boone when he was asked, are there any positives that came from the Rays series?
They put some good at-bats together to get back in the game, obviously. But, we obviously take away a lot of good from the way Pax threw the ball and get ready for a homestand.
Get ready for a homestand, and finally, they are home. It's a 9-game homestand. 12 of their next 16 will be played. I think 18 of 20 will be played in New York because three of those games will be at Citi Field, so the Yankees will not have to leave where they live in New York. 12 of the first 16 games have been away from the Bronx. The Yankees are 10-6, and the Braves are 11-7. That's the Yankee Manager's Report, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Paramus. Take advantage of the Mercedes-Benz Summer Event going on now at Mercedes-Benz of Paramus, 755 Route 17 South, online at MercedesBenzParamus.com. One other baseball note that we haven't even gotten to yet. They've handed out the suspensions in the Oakland and Houston brawl. So, Laureano got 6 games, and he's appealing, so he'll continue to play for the hottest team in baseball. And the hitting coach, Alex Cintron, got 20 games. He got a third of the season. He got 20 games. And I got to tell you this, and I usually don't come down on the side of, you got to crush somebody, but what he did, I think, was unacceptable. And when Laureano charged the Astros bench, he kind of ducked behind three players who covered his backside. But the Astros, who built such a bad culture, starting with the GM that's gone, and remember what happened with the assistant GM who got fired, who said those awful things to the women covering the playoffs, fire him or suspend him for the remainder of the year. You can't have this stuff continue to go on, and that's what happened. So Major League Baseball gave him 20. The Astros should say, you know what, come back next year when you've thought about what you've done. Is that fair or not?
That's very fair. I don't know if you saw Boone announced that Giancarlo Stanton, grade 1 hamstring strain, expecting this 3-4 weeks.
So that's a month, and then you're talking about hopefully getting him ready. And I thought if we talked about it yesterday. By the way, it's raining here in the Bronx. We talked about it yesterday. Take a look at Joel Sherman's story today, how that Stanton contract is going to be an albatross for the next 7 years. Because if you look at the Stanton contract and then the Gerrit Cole contract, who goes on for another 8 years, before the Yankees do anything else with anybody else on their team, they have $68 million that are tied up in two players per year. $68 million. So you can't say, well, the Yankees can absorb it. Well, they can because they have a lot of talent. But down the line, that's going to be money that's not coming off. And the reason the Yankees made the Stanton deal was that, listen, we know the back end of the contract, he's probably not going to be productive. But we're going to get the prime years of him. But the prime years have been not good. Last year, he played 18 games. This year, I mean, he started out great. And then he it looks like he can't keep his legs healthy. No.
So 3 to 4 weeks. So that's
tough.
It's also, pretty significant.
I'm assuming you saw, Michael, that Joe Biden has picked his VP candidate as well?
Yes, I did. Kamala Harris, right?
Yes, Kamala Harris. By the way, what are the odds that in the same week, the legendary wrestler Kamala would die and a person named Kamala, same name, virtually, now nominee for vice
that's
president?
That's a stretch, Armstrong stretch.
What do you mean?
I think the odds are off the board.
Yeah, there's no betting on that. If you have,
yeah,
this,
and Vegas wouldn't even touch that.
There's no one's touching that.
And I'm still reeling from the Lou Holtz comment.
What did he say? I didn't see.
You ready?
Yeah.
Peter, you ready?
Yeah.
Lou Holtz tells Fox News that college football needs to play amid coronavirus pandemic this fall. Quote, "Let's move on with our life. When they stormed Normandy, they knew there were going to be casualties. There were going to be risks."
He's
so Lou's like 75, right? Let Lou take a dip in Lake of the Ozarks.
And
I didn't
realize
casualties. So give it a roll. Go for it, Lou.
And I didn't realize college football meant as much to our country and our livelihoods and our freedoms as the poor lads that stormed the beach at Normandy.
How about this, a quote from the athletic director of Ohio State, Gene Smith, on the Big Ten Network. He said, "The reality is the game is not like sitting in a classroom. It's not like walking across campus. It's not like wearing masks while you're in a lab. It's full contact. It's a lot different than going to class. A lot different."
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show? Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hey, everybody! It's me! I'm back! And guess what? It's another Don segment!
We're doing the list, Michael. I don't care if you don't like it.
The Daily Don!
I'll fight to the death for this list.
It's the Daily Don Show. He makes lists.
Take it away, Donnie.
All right, gentlemen, if you're ready, top five New York sports team fights or altercations within the team.
Within the team, another team.
Not against another team, with their own team. Self-inflicted altercations and fights. Top five in not just New York sports history, I take that back, in all of New York. All of sports. Sorry. All sports. Well, out of market as well. It's not New York. I changed my mind. Early on, I was going to do just New York, but I branched out. But New York is well represented. Don't you worry.
I'll start because I want to. How about Strawberry and Hernandez on picture day?
Strawberry and Hernandez, spring training picture day 1989 is number five. Apparently, Daryl Strawberry said, "I only stand next to friends." And it was all caught on video. Wasn't that much of a dust-up, but still, to see Keith Hernandez and Daryl Strawberry lying on top of each other in fisticuffs, what was supposed to be a nice team picture during spring training, was very awkward as the Mets 86 team was beginning to start to show some strain. That would be number five on the list. Good job.
You said New York is well represented on the list.
Oh, New York is well represented. And I got the idea because it's the actual anniversary of one of the altercations.
It was one we just talked. What was the one that we just recently had a fight with a caller about on the show?
Not that I recall. No.
By the way,
and I will tell you, that there are three that happened to New York teams, and two that happened that have a New York flair to it because the participants at once upon a time played in New York or would play in New York later on.
Happened to New York teams. So shouldn't that be an obvious Knicks Heat conversation?
No. He's not getting it, Michael.
I got one. How about Goose Gossage and Cliff Johnson?
I thought about that one. That was at the urinal.
Thought about it.
Didn't have it in the top five, though.
Thought about it.
How about Billy Martin and Ed Whitson?
That's a good one, but I have another one. Another Billy.
Another Billy.
Sure. Remember, it's fights and altercations. Billy really wanted a piece of this guy. Fights? And it was on national television.
Reggie. Billy Reggie in Fenway.
I got that at number one. Reggie Jackson kind of dogged it out in the field, and Billy confronted him.
Well, now Reggie listens to the show. Billy thought he dogged it. Reggie doesn't think he dogged it.
I understand. But that's the way Billy looked at it. I'm kind of getting it from Billy's perspective. Sorry. And
fair enough.
So they got into it verbally, and then Billy had to be held back, which is not bad. He was 51 at the time. Reggie was 20 years his junior. Didn't stop Billy from trying to go after him and had to be stopped in the dugout on national television. Yankees Red Sox classic number one.
So we have three now?
Yeah, you got five and you got one. So you need 4, 3, and 2.
Yeah, you have two. Missing three.
Yes.
Is this only during real games?
Only one of the three happened after a game. One happened at practice and one happened during training camp.
So that would be Geno Smith.
That would be Geno Smith, and that is the anniversary. It happened 5 years ago today when IK broke Geno Smith's jaw over what turned out to be $600. Number three. Number two, excuse me. I have it number two.
So,
he was the starting quarterback. It's
the two that are remaining,
that
are they New York?
Later.
Or are these national?
Well, these both are national, but they have
New
York flair to it.
I got it. How about P.J. Carlissimo and Latrell Sprewell?
Yeah, Sprewell's passes were not crisp enough for P.J. P.J. mentioned it to Latrell. And Latrell responded by basically trying to choke P.J. Carlissimo to death. That was on December 1st, 1997 during practice. And Sprewell, because of that, Michael, ended up a Nick. That's number three.
How about the Jordan Will Perdue practice punch?
No, because that was kind of one-sided, and we don't have video footage. I will tell you, there's video footage of this fourth one.
There's no video footage of Geno.
No, but that's still, you know.
Give us a sport for the last one.
Excuse me? The sport is baseball.
Give us a sport.
It's baseball. It's a manager and a player.
It's a manager and a player.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah.
Lou Piniella, Rob Dibble.
Yeah, there you go. Number four. Rob Dibble didn't pitch in a 3-2 victory over the Atlanta Braves. When Lou Piniella was asked about it, he said, Dibble wasn't available because of a sore shoulder. They went to Dibble, and Dibble said, Pinella's a liar. And then the two confronted each other in front of the media in the locker room. The fight didn't last very long. Lou didn't stand much of a chance, but still, Lou had a lot of Billy in him. And Dibble had a lot of Reggie in him. And that turned out to be a nice altercation that turned out to be number four. So Mets at picture day, number five. Dibble and Piniella, number four. Latrell Sprewell and P.J. Carlissimo, three. Geno Smith and IK, two. Reggie Jackson and Billy Martin, number one. Top five altercations with
E. Beautiful. Beautiful. I love it. Let's take some phone calls because, RJ, did we get the guest that we're looking for next?
We actually just locked it down moments ago.
All right, Howard Cross has some things to say about, you know, the Giants on radio. Obviously, a former Giant as well. He has some things to say about the college football postponements, and we'll talk to him in just a moment. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Ricky in Queens. Ricky.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. So I was listening a little bit earlier, and you guys were talking about the Mets and Brody Van Wagen trying to make an impression on the new ownership and try to keep his job. I don't think he has any chance of keeping his job, to tell you the honest truth. It's just a complete mess. The only way that he might be able to salvage it is by, instead of trying to get a new picture and trying to bring people in to make a run, why don't you sell off some of your talent? Why don't you make trades to bring in and rebuild the farm system? Make it more attractive for the new ownership to come in and say, hey, there's a bright future. Clear the books. Get a haul for Jacob DeGrom.
Ricky, okay, so I like the way you think. You know, you're thinking outside the box. You know, from my quote book, what's in it for me? Why would Brody Van Wagenen do that? He's not going to be here to reap the benefits of a haul of young players. And also, you'd have a fan base, am I right, Don, that would absolutely revolt if you traded Jacob DeGrom, the only great thing about the team.
Yeah, now you can't. Either way, I don't know if he's trying to impress the new owners or whether he is just going to listen to his current boss. How motivated are the Wilpons to think about the future after they're going to sell the team? So that would be my fear, right, Michael? It's not so much Brody trying to impress the next ownership of him knowing he's probably gone and the Wilpons telling him, this is what I want you to do because I'm your boss right now and I want you to sell. I want you to go buy because I want to try to make the playoffs in my last year owning the team. Isn't that the more logical thing?
Yes, I believe, unfortunately, that's what's going to happen. Mike in Staten Island. Mike.
Hello, guys.
Hello, Mike.
How you doing?
Good, you? Good.
I love your show, and Don, that Lou Holtz quote was horrible.
I know.
I just want to talk about college football for a moment. I listen to you guys and the morning show on ESPN all the time. And
thank you.
I just don't hear anything from the NCAA about football. I mean, you got conferences canceling their schedule. You got them making up schedules. Doesn't the NCAA, the governing body of college football, don't they have a say in it, ultimately?
Mike,
we're not hearing anything from them.
They are toothless when it comes to these big conferences. The conferences run football. The NCAA is completely without any kind of power. They could say whatever they want, and the conference commissioners, they run the freight. They're the ones that are doing it. The NCAA is an impotent, incompetent organization that should be completely raised and started over again where there could be a real governing body that has real power. So they have nothing to say about this. Absolutely nothing. The head of the SEC is more powerful than the head of the NCAA. Now, the NCAA has more power over basketball because that's more of an overseer of those 300-plus schools. But there's just certain pockets of the country and certain teams that run college football. Those are in that end up in the playoffs and the championship game. The NCAA has nothing to do with that, nothing. They can't move. They couldn't move a pebble with their power.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Yeah.
Catch the show on demand whenever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
A very interesting conversation that we just had with Howard Cross. And, I mean, you are putting so much faith in every single member of her team. And you're saying that they're safer in the school when they're part of a team. And Howard's saying that you can't control a young man, even if the father says don't go. So why would you be able to control a young man because the coach says don't go? How about the kids that don't play? How about the kids that are just bench players? How about the kids that can go out and go to a frat party and not get caught and then come back and spread it to their teammates? I just don't get how this is the ultimate bubble. This is not a bubble. There are kids that do get in trouble during the season that ignore the fact that if they get in trouble, they're not going to play. I'm sorry. It is not a bubble like the NBA and the NHL has. It's just not. I understand where he says that they have to be responsible, but if they're irresponsible because they're not on a team, well, then they're just irresponsible. I don't care how old they are. And I think that some of them would push the envelope. hey, Rutgers was practicing and they had all of these positive tests. Why'd they have the positive tests? Because they all went to a party.
Right. See, that's the blind, like, loyalty of the system and how much it works. And that's why it was so difficult to kind of engage with Howard, because, first of all, he would shut us down because we didn't play college sports, so we don't know what we're talking about, which makes it very difficult because I didn't play college sports. But I do follow enough to know that as much as you think that the coach has his players under his thumb, there's plenty of examples where that doesn't turn out to be the case. Plus, the other thing he kept shutting me down on, he just wouldn't want to hear it, is the fact that you know for damn sure that that's not the reason they're playing. These conferences aren't going to play because they think it's the best well-being of the player. They're playing because they want to make money. So, obviously, he's looking at it in one way, but that's not the way the NCAA is looking at it. So, who's protecting these players if these coaches don't follow the protocol?
Right? I'd like
and
to
who's
also
agreeing
know this,
to the
Don,
protocol?
You're going to control 18 to 22-year-olds, but the Indians could not control Plesac or Clevenger. These are professional athletes.
Right.
They couldn't control them when one of their teammates is a cancer survivor. They couldn't control them, but you're going to be able to control the 90th kid on a college football roster. Come on. That's just being, I think it's naive. And Howard has played. Howard's been a professional and all of that. But you have a better chance of catching it on a football field, or as much of a chance of catching on a football, but probably more so with the breathing and the snot and the spit and all that than you do at a frat party. I'm sorry,
yeah, listen,
you do.
Buddy, well, I'm not going to, sorry, Don, I'm not going to deny everything Howard said. And I actually would agree that if you're careless at a frat party, I think that's more dangerous than a football game. But those things aren't mutually exclusive. And the thing that frustrated me about the conversation was him taking at face value that kids will just inherently be better because they have such a watchful eye. Guys, where was the watchful, and I know no one wants you to throw up personal examples, where was the watchful eye on Aaron Hernandez? Okay, and you can go chapter and verse with players who did stupid things during their seasons. So that idea that now all of a sudden that's the saving grace, and then furthermore, so it's great. So now we've come up with a plan to protect 100 players at a university? That's it. We need to have a football program to protect these 100 important people, but the other 20,000 kids of the school, good luck.
When I asked Howard would he sign a waiver of any liability, he said yes, if they caught it from one of the players being irresponsible. But how about catching it on the field? You Notre Dame might be buttoned up. The team they play might not be.
That's right. And also, do we know that there is going to be as much focus on the fourth string linemen as there is on the starters?
There's no way it will be.
So when you got 70 guys to keep an eye on, there's going to be that one. All you need is that one guy that decided to be irresponsible. Nobody pays attention to him because he's barely on the team anyway. But he gets in contact with a bunch of guys. They transfer it. He didn't rule out the possibility of you catching it on the field. And also didn't rule out the thing that where in some hot spots you can't possibly play because just going home could be dangerous. But what's not a hot spot now, Michael, could be a hot spot a month from now.
And how about this from one of our listeners, Michael Kronberg? Great point. He said, let's say you buy into Howard Cross's premise. These players are also supposed to go to in-person classes with students who are not being supervised by a coach. There's dangers for exposure all over campus. You're not in a little team bubble. You actually do go to classes if there are classes at that said university and not distance learning.
Mom.
Come on.
I never see anybody be more universally panned on social media than that interview.
Let's see what people say here. Let's go to Nick in Seaford. Nick.
Hey, good evening, guys. Just to piggyback what Michael, you and Don just said, let's just say the third string player that's like a Rudy that walks on and makes the team, and after a big win on a Saturday, he's out. He's like, hey, I'm on the Alabama team or I'm on Notre Dame, and he goes to a party, and let's just say he's rooming with Howard Cross's kid. And he infects Howard Cross, who in turn infects five or six other people. We don't know enough about this virus. We're finding out that you could develop heart issues with the heart muscle, like the pitcher from the Red Sox, Ramirez, I believe his name is, that developed these.
Rodriguez.
They could have heart issues for the rest of their lives. And, you know, then, or God forbid, one of them gets, you know, sick and ends up in the hospital on a ventilator. I just think Howard is way too close to this, and he just can't see.
And the thing is, his argument would be, well, you know what, there's always that risk, but there's a higher risk away from the football field. I love the fact that they almost become animals once they're not under protection. Like so there's no chance that anybody would be responsible. The only way they would even remotely be responsible is if it's in season. Like, once the season is over, you can't control them. Like, they don't even have minds. I mean,
now, by the way, I don't fully disagree with him on how much you can't count on, particularly big time D1 college football players. I kind of agree with Howard. What I don't agree with is that all of a sudden they're going to fall in line,
right?
Because they'll never risk anything during the football season. Players never do anything stupid ever during the football season. I'm sorry. Does it help the chances? Sure, because you may have some kids that while their parents, who are calling them from 3,000 miles away, can't convince them to not do something, their scary line coach might be able to do that. Sure, but it's not going to solve the problem completely.
And again, I hate to say this because it sounds cold. If your kid gets in trouble and gets the virus because he's not in the confines of a team structure, that's on him. He made the bad choice. But you can make every right choice you want on a football team, and if somebody that's the 70th player on the team that you're playing went out and got the other guys infected when they play you, that's, you have no control over that. None. But you do have control whether or not you go to that frat party. And if you go, then you're choosing the pleasures of the frat party over staying healthy. Sorry, that's on you. That is on you. Otherwise, you can catch it if you're on a football team when it's not on you. I don't know how much more clear that could be. Let's go to Justin is on Long Island. Justin.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
How you doing, Justin?
Good. I just wanted to comment on that guy, Howard. I think he's delusional, this guy. There's no chance that it only takes one kid, and the one kid could come back, and not only can he infect his team, but the team he goes and visits, which could cause an outbreak within that school as well. And the only way his scenario works is if they don't play games. Yeah, the camp, the training, all that, they're going to be on tight regimen. The exposure factor is the problem. When you expose yourself to more people and you're playing a contact sport, there's more chances. Like, it's no sense. It just can't happen.
I think that of all the sports, I think that basketball and football, probably football more so, are the biggest possible spreaders if people are positive. If there's somebody on the field that's positive. I want to see the NFL get through this. So it's funny, though, because you know, when we asked him about the NFL, he said, well, you know, that's different than college. So guys that are making $20 million a year, they might be irresponsible, but kids that are making zip and they're in college to have a good time, they're going to be responsible. Mike Clevenger and Zach Plesac are not going to be responsible, but a kid right. that might not ever play on Notre Dame's fifth depth chart, he's going to be responsible. I don't know how you could sign up for that. How could you say that that's true?
You got to respect the spread of it, too. All it takes is one person to be positive, and that can change everything. Baseball found that out, too. Baseball thought they would be okay. One positive, pull the guy out, right? They turned out to be wrong because then it just kind of ran through the room and then they had to suspend games, which obviously they would have to do in college football, but how do you do that when you only play once a week? Like, there's a lot of things at play here.
And also,
yeah, sure,
Don,
I guess they are safer when they're playing than out there because of the protection, but you're making it seem like it's going to be perfect.
There's
no shot.
I wish I would have come up with this. Let's say that I'm just rounding 70 players on the ND football team. Do you think any of them, you guys give me a number, any of them have a girlfriend?
I would think most of them do.
You would think most of them do, right? So do you think those girlfriends are under the same guidance under Brian Kelly as the players are? Absolutely not. So that means that the players will not be able to see their girlfriend for the entire length of the football season. So the player could actually be very, very responsible and then smooch with his girlfriend for 5 minutes and boom, he has it. And then he could spread it to the rest of the team. He didn't go to a frat party. He's been dating the girl for 2 years. She might have gone to the library and got it there. I mean, how could people have their head in the sand so much? Those people are not under the same watchful eye of Brian Kelly as the players are.
And again, if the motivation by these conferences was we got to play the keep the players safe, which is complete, which is so bogus.
It's hogwash.
You know, it's they're playing because of the fact that there's money to be made. So you believe that all of these colleges are going to follow the protocols or care when you got most of these coaches who think they can punch the coronavirus in the face. You got people like Lou Holtz that are comparing it to charging Normandy and that these players are all expendable, right? You've got coaches who've gone on record to say that nothing can happen to these players because young people don't die, okay? So if you get a coach like that, who is protecting the players? They don't have a union to go to. When the protocols aren't being followed, what if there's going to be some coach that's going to try to sneak a positive guy in because they can't afford to lose him for the game? You know, the kids are going to want to play. Who's governing all this when you know the motivation is money? So please not make it out to be that these guys are all high and mighty trying to protect these players to keep them safe. They never cared about the players for a second. They only care about the players for the money that they can make. So it's ridiculous to think that they're trying to protect the players and that all the coaches and the colleges are going to do the right thing. All they care about is making sure those players are healthy enough to play on Saturday. That's all they care about. And as long as that happens, that's all that matters. They don't care about the safety of the players.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.